are about to hear are the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
You seem to understand. I'm not locked in here with you.
That's it! You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone! Welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California, member of the National Association of Realtors. And here with a whole new bag. Well, maybe not an entirely new bag, but the show's going to change. And I guess I should lead with that. We're going to go to a completely different way of delivering the show. Well, you're still going to get it the way you're going to get it. The RSS feed isn't going to change for you in terms of it arriving. There's not going to be an action item on your end of receiving this so that you can continue to enjoy the show. But some things are going to happen. I've been kind of alluding to it for a long time, and I have been spending a lot of time doing, you know, more soul searching than anything else, because there's a variety of things that have been bouncing around in my head lately. I'm not entirely satisfied with the direction the show has gone personally, or I feel like I'm missing some opportunities. And to be very honest, the focus of the show from my end, really from the day I started it, was really just to be a way for me to vent. And I know that sounds a little bit nuts, but I mean, that was really how it started. I didn't advertise, you know, I mentioned that I was a licensed real estate person when I started the show, but I didn't give out my name. I didn't use it as a marketing tool or any of those types of things. But as time has gone on, I'm actually getting more and more out of doing this show, but I feel like I'm sort of limited. You know, I've been doing this show now for extended long periods of time, meaning that they're long shows. They're an hour to 2 hour shows. And so what I've been doing is a lot of research, and I've been doing research into what people want in terms of what they consume in a show, what they're looking for, what makes a show a popular show. I'm gonna embrace the idea of creating a more popular show, and I've looked back at my numbers from the past. I've looked at how other shows perform, and I've done a lot of research. So I'm gonna go back. This is something I did years and years ago. I'm gonna do smaller shows. I liked the idea of sitting down in front of the microphone once a week and just sort of letting it all come out. But the problem is, and this is a complaint I get from some listeners, is that I often cover too many subjects in one show. So when they want to go back and find something that I was talking about, it's very difficult. One of the biggest complaints was that the shows are not itemized enough in terms of knowing what's in them, in terms of the descriptions, which becomes problematic for me because oftentimes I will go off into the weeds a little bit. So I'm not even 100% sure what some shows cover when I've finished them, unless I write them up immediately. And sometimes time doesn't allow that. And the other thing was the live aspect of the show. I liked the idea of doing the live aspect of the show. And to be really honest, I think that while a huge part of it was to hopefully have people calling in and responding live to folks' calls, another part of it was it's a little scary. And I think there's something to be said for doing something that gets your heart beating a little bit. So doing a live show where I knew it was just spilling out onto the internet, as I said it, I was kind of exhilarating. But so today marks a monumental change in the show. Number one, this is not a live show. I am recording this show under more studio-like conditions. The audio may sound a little bit better. It may or may not. I mean, Blog Talk Radio very much screws with the audio once it gets uploaded in terms of compressing it. So that's something else I'm going to be addressing. And I've also alluded to the fact we'll be leaving Blog Talk Radio. For a while there, I kind of changed my mind. Now I'm back in the mind of not using Blog Talk Radio anymore. And let me explain why. As I mentioned before, the number one thing that drew me to Blog Talk Radio was the fact I could do things live. That was really it. Prior to that, I always hosted it on my website, never advertised it at all, hooked it up to iTunes was it. That was the furthest I ever took it. And to be really honest, I can't really point to a huge increase in listenership that I can peg to Blog Talk Radio. When I first started doing the show in January of 2007, just as a recorded podcast, it did fairly well. I didn't do super long shows. I usually did anywhere from, you know, I usually did about an hour, I guess. But it grew and it grew and it steadily grew. And when I shifted over to Blog Talk Radio, it continued to grow at the same pace. The vast majority of folks who consume my show do not consume it through Blog Talk Radio. In fact, I get more people who come to my show through my website than I get coming from Blog Talk Radio. So, and the flip side of working with Blog Talk Radio is that they have a ownership position in my show to some extent in terms of being able to tell me what I can and can't do with advertising on the show, that type of thing, and expecting to get a chunk of any advertising dollars that I might generate. So this is probably going to be the last few days that I'm on Blog Talk Radio. Probably at the end of July, what'll happen is you will still continue to get the show via iTunes. You can still get it via Stitcher. All of that stuff will still continue to work. The Stitcher one may be weird now that I think about it, because I think that points directly to Blog Talk Radio. So I may have to resubmit Stitcher. So for those of you who are using Stitcher, I can't promise that you won't have to make a slight change here. But what's going to happen is that the feed that I have going to iTunes, I have a mediary in there, so I can just change it at the mediary, and then iTunes will get an automatic update. I'm almost certain Stitcher will still be good because I think I have that pointing to the mediary as well. But the long and the short of it is I have the system set up so this will be as easy as possible for folks to transition. Now, there are several reasons why, in addition to what I've mentioned, as to why I want to do this. Number one, the tools that are at my disposal in the software that I have on my computer allow me to be a little bit more dynamic in terms of my podcast. I can put links at certain places in the show. So you'll see things pop up on the artwork and those types of things while you're playing it, particularly if you're using it in iTunes or any Apple device. So it gives a second level of functionality. The other thing I'm going to do is, since I'm going to be reducing the duration of each show down to about 30 minutes, I'm going to be focused on one topic for each show. And the plan is to do at least 5 shows a week. Now, I know for those of you who've listened for a long time, this has been a subject I've brought up before, and I've said, well, you know, maybe I'll try it out this week. I'm gonna play it conquistador style. I'm gonna bring the boats up to the beach, and I'm going to burn them. So this is what's going to happen. I'm going to go ahead and start doing this. I'm doing it in 30-minute chunks probably. And the main reason for this, to be super honest, is it allows me to focus on one piece of information, and it's also the size that most people want to consume as a maximum. And I know there are some of you out there who disagree with that you like some of the longer format stuff. So don't worry. I will probably do longer format shows when necessary. I'm not going to commit to doing them once a week or once every other week. But I know that there will come a time when certain subjects just demand longer periods of time. So those are some of the changes. More of the changes that are going to be happening is I'm going to focus more on real estate as it relates to you achieving your goals. We're going to still talk about the same things we talked about, but we're going to add into that how it can be part of your investment strategy. So it'll still continue. We'll continue to talk about what's happening in real estate, how buyers and sellers are being affected by what's happening. That'll all still be part of the mix, but we're also going to spend equal time with landlords, investors. We're also going to talk about overall strategies to increase your independence through wealth. I mean, that's when I started thinking about what is something I would like to give to other people, and what do I believe I'm trying to give to people when I'm providing my services in real estate? It's for folks to achieve goals that allow them more freedom, that allow them more independence. And I know for a lot of folks that money is a bad word for some reason, but the bottom line is it's just a medium of exchange, right? Person A does something for person B, and depending on the skill level and difficulty, that person gets paid a certain amount of money, right? Well, and by having more money, you have the option of using that to trade for more leisure time, for time to educate yourself and other things, to think, to sit back and not have to worry about where the next meal is coming from or whether or not you have a roof over your head. Once you get that certain level of wealth at your fingertips, the options open up for you. You can sit back and decide, you know what, I'd love to start focusing on the more artistic side and learn how to sculpt or paint or whatever it is you want to do that's something that you feel like is going to make your life more enriched, right? But I think a twist I'm going to put on this is the same kind of thing I've put on real estate all along, and that is that all of this stuff needs to be something that is done in a way that that's right. And I hate to just say right because that implies that I'm the guy who says what's right. What I'm really trying to say is use through methods that you can feel okay about. I mean, I don't do real estate the way a lot of real estate agents do it because I'd have trouble sleeping at night. I don't like the way things get done. So what I'm going to focus on is not just real estate, but the entrepreneurial spirit that generates wealth for people to be independent. And of course, because that's where my experience lies, I'm going to focus on the real estate part of that. And something that's really sort of lit this fire under me is my recent experience with purchasing my investment property in Hawaii. Now, this was one that represented a little bit more risk than other deals, personal deals I've been involved with in the past. You know, I've been able to get involved with investments type properties in the past, but never really like this. And it really made me realize that some of the things that people can use as vehicles to achieve some of life's goals can be pretty scary. And it would be great to hear stories of people who've done it. So here's something else I'm going to do. I want to start interviewing more people. I don't want to just talk about me and what I've done and what I'm doing, although I think that can be helpful for people. And of course, it can be from the real estate specific stuff. But what I'm going to be asking for from my listeners is to become active participants. I want to be able to interview people who have achieved a certain level of independence or have started an effort that's paying off. I want to be able to share stories with everyone else who listens to the show that you can use as a jumping off point to start achieving your goals. And I know so much of the things we've talked about recently relating to investments had very little to do with a knowledge about real estate or anything else. It had a whole lot more to do with conquering your fears and things that worry you and trying to put things into a perspective that make it possible for you to do it without giving yourself a heart attack. And I think that by people sharing real stories, that can be accomplished. So some of the other changes that are going to happen? Well, we're going to continue to talk about various things that are happening in real estate, the news, what interest rates are doing, you know, when I'm seeing what my spidey senses are doing relating to whatever news is coming down the pike. Those are all be part of the mix, but it's also going to be product reviews, not just product reviews, but reviews of services, products, things out there that maybe I'm using. Now, one promise I'll make is that I'm not just going to throw products out there use it to make me money type of way. What I want to do is I use an awful lot of different tools in my real estate business. I'm using new tools in my investing part of my interest in real estate. And I like these tools. These things are working out well for me. They're helping me make good decisions. So I want to share that with you. So what I'm going to do is review tools that fall into two categories. One's that I have just sort of fallen into myself and that I'm using in my day-to-day, and giving you an inside look into how it's working for me. Sometimes this will be very specific to real estate. Sometimes it will not. You know, I am finding that my interests in terms of setting my wealth strategy are, while still very linked with my knowledge of real estate, because that's a comfort zone for me, frankly, I'm also interested in looking into other things. So as I explore those things, I want to be able to interview people. I want to be able to interview folks who make products and services that would be interesting to someone like me who's looking to grow entrepreneurially, and for folks who are listening who also want to do the same. So it's sort of a new direction for the show. I want to make the show a bigger part of what I do, which means more time. So that means I need to use this as a way to also generate revenue. So I am going to be doing that, but I'm going to do it in a way that's as painless as possible for you. What'll happen is we'll start embracing the idea of having sponsors. I've resisted having sponsors forever. It took about a year when I started the show for me to start getting calls from folks who wanted to sponsor the show, put ads in the show. And I was very married to the idea of, you know, I don't want it to hurt the purity of the show. I don't want my message to get tainted with this idea that I'm trying to make money off of my listeners. And I guess I've kind of come to the realization that as long as I don't just push stuff that I haven't tried, as long as I get an opportunity to try it out, take it for a test drive, and I'm honest with you in my assessment, and those folks are willing to pay me to let them be a venue to get exposure to you, I'm okay with that. As long as they're willing to let me be honest, that's great. And I will do that. And the other thing is I will reject anything that I don't like. I mean, if I don't think something's good, I'm not going to put it out there and link it to my show. The end goal here is for this show to become a much bigger part of what I do. I like doing it. I like the interaction I get with folks who listen to the show. And again, I've never been focused on ramping up huge number of listeners. I've never really cared about that one way or the other. I've liked the idea of helping as many people as possible. But recently I started thinking this could be the vehicle that I can use to achieve a lot of things. I've talked about how disappointed I find myself being when I'm interacting with a lot of real estate folks who seem so focused on the wrong things in terms of the type of service that they should provide. Well, if I can get this show being popular enough, maybe that message can get spread a little bit more effectively. For all those folks out there who are struggling with figuring out how to achieve their bigger goals in life, to get a little bit more freedom through accumulating some wealth, wouldn't it be great if I could use this show as a venue to do that? So those are sort of my new mission statement. I had a mission statement when I first started the show in 2007. It was really a very short one, and that was let everything I hate about real estate out of my body. Do it by speaking about it. That's evolved so much over the years, and a lot of that has to do with the great feedback I've gotten from folks who listen. So I hope you're willing to come along on the ride with me. Some of you have come an awful long way over an awful long period of time. You've been super patient when I've sort of stepped away from the show for a while, and you've been very encouraging when I have had personal setbacks in my life that I've shared on the show. So I feel like I've got a really good relationship with at least some of you, and I hope all of you are willing to come along. So I guess today what we'll do is that the topic of today's show will be big changes to the show, and also a return to a topic we talked about probably a month ago, in that I was noticing a discrepancy between housing starts, home builder confidence, and just generally what was going on in new home construction. Let me sort of revisit what I was seeing. We had all these reports that were saying that the confidence level of home manufacturers was super high. We were seeing numbers that new home sales were high. But we weren't seeing numbers that indicated builders were actually building tons of new homes. The starts were not up, which led me to believe that maybe the folks out there building homes were maybe more concerned than they wanted to generally communicate. Well, because I like to go where the numbers take me, I like to go where the data leads me, I wanted to revisit that because a couple of articles came out over the last few days that sort of set this back into a narrative that at least the home builders are showing a lot more confidence. Now, the first one's from Housing Wire, and it's something we've heard before. Home builder confidence hits highest level in a decade. Housing continues to improve at a steady pace, is the quote the National Association of Home Builders and Wells Fargo Housing Market Index released on Thursday. This is a story from the 16th, so just 4 days ago. Let's see, and it's the highest reading since September of 2014, which isn't great. Their future sales are ranked at 71, lead the report with present sales right behind at 66. Still lagging as traffic, down 1 point in the month to 43 and reflecting a lack of first-time buyers in the market. According to this, all regions are showing growth, led by the West at a composite 63, followed by the South at 62, the Midwest at 59, and the Northeast, which has been under 50 for a long run, is now at 52. And quote, the fact that builder confidence has returned to levels not seen since 2005 shows that housing continues to improve at a steady pace. Said National Association of Home Builders Chairman Tom Woods, a home builder from Blue Springs, Missouri, quote, as we head into the second half of 2015, we should expect a continued recovery of the housing market. Now, that's very similar to stuff that we were seeing weeks ago, months ago, where they were talking about how everything seemed to be looking really good, but the actions they were taking really didn't seem to reflect that. It seemed to indicate an industry that maybe was a little bit cooler in reality or behind the scenes than it was with what it was telling folks publicly. New piece of data that came in here is interesting. This is also from Housing Wire, dated the 16th as well. New home purchase applications climbed 1% in June. Now, this is from the Mortgage Bankers Association builder application survey data for June of 2015, and it increased 1% relative to the previous month. Let's see. And on a seasonally adjusted basis, it increased 8% from the previous year. Let's see. Conventional loans composed 67.2% of the loan applications, FHA loans 19.6%. RHS, USDA loans composed 1%, and VA loans composed 12.2%. The average loan size of new homes increased from $320,000 to $321,000. And the Mortgage Bankers Association estimates new single-family home sales were running at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 496,000 units in June of 2015, based on their data. So that piece of data shows us that new home sales are up 8% from last year, up 1% just from the previous month. In my world, I actually would call that not a great increase from month to month. You should see a much larger increase from May to June. What'll be interesting to see is what we get from June to July, because remember, sometimes these escrows can take 30 days to close. You would expect that there'd be there would naturally be an increase from May to June. When you build into the delay, the biggest increase would actually probably be from June to July or July to August, right? If it's a month, if someone starts shopping after the kids are out of school, maybe a couple of weeks into summer, you would start to see things going into escrow in June and then closing in July. So I'm actually kind of hot to see what the July numbers say, because that'll give us a good indication of the overall direction to see if that trend is actually continuing. And I would expect it to. I would expect it to increase anyway, because that's what the seasonal system tends to do to these kinds of numbers. Now we go on to the final one. Housing starts in June rise to near 2007 levels. So this is data from JG Business. This is the Journal Gazette. New home construction climbed in June to the second highest level since November of 2007 as builders stepped up work on apartment projects. Now, so yes, construction is up. But what's interesting is the dominant force here is apartment projects. According to this article, housing starts rose 9.8% to 1.17 million annualized rate from a revised 1.07 million in May that was stronger than previously estimated. Figures from the Commerce Department showed Friday in Washington. Groundbreaking on multifamily dwellings jumped 29.4%, so nearly 30% were multifamily. Building permits for single and multifamily properties, a gauge of future construction, climbed to an almost eight-year high, the report showed. Steady job gains, low mortgage rates, and gradual easing of lending standards are propelling sales, indicating that housing will become a bigger source of strength for the economy. Let's see here. The gain in starts of multifamily homes followed a 16.9% decrease the previous month. And that's what we were talking about, right? There was generally a decrease earlier, and those are the numbers we were reporting here, and it kind of stood at odds with what the builders were saying in terms of what their confidence level was supposed to be. Three of the four regions had a decrease in single-family construction in June. That's another piece of data to be paying attention to, because maybe that doesn't mean, while there's good news here, maybe there's some other news that might inform us. Paced by 27.3% drop in the Northeast, 7.1% decline in the West, according to the report. Building permits increased 7.4% in June to 1.34 million annualized rate, the highest rate since July of 2007. Now, I find it very interesting in areas where like that I'm in, the Northeast and the West, that single-family construction is down. Now, there are some gigantic apartment complexes going up in Southern Silicon Valley, in Southern San Jose, right along the 85 freeway, for those of you who know the area. I see these things and they're gigantic. They're like, they look to be 7-8 stories tall, and they are huge, huge campuses. I'm actually concerned at how undesirable those kinds of gigantic developments are likely to be for folks who live there. These are not the kinds of places I'd want to live if I had to live in an apartment. You're going to be shoulder to shoulder with an awful lot of folks just stacked as high as you can possibly stack them. So I guess what we can go with here is that in general across the country, housing starts are reflecting the positivity that we're seeing from some of the house builders. In some of these marketplaces, though, very clearly, folks see a higher return on their investment in a rental, in an apartment, than they do in even condos or single-family residential homes. So, and that's true in my area, according to this. It's true in, did they say the Northeast or the Northwest? I'm not seeing it. I totally missed it. The gains in starts of multifamily homes followed a 16% decrease the following month. Starts of single-family houses eased. Three of the four regions had a decrease in single-family construction in June. 27.3% drop in the Northeast. 7.1% declines in the West. It'd be interesting to see more tightly focused regions. I'd love to see what the Bay Area had for that. There's an awful lot of talk about how we're kind of in a recovery mode here in Silicon Valley. But those are very interesting numbers. It actually surprises me a little bit, but it tells you that the folks who are in charge of building these things have far more confidence that they're going to that building apartment complexes, multifamily units, is the way to go rather than single-family residential homes. Given how much single-family residential homes cost, clearly, folks are seeing a tight market in terms of rentals. If you are someone who owns a rental property in the Silicon Valley area, particularly in the San Jose area, would I be concerned about this? The fact that you're suddenly going to have a ton of rental opportunities coming available probably by the end of this year in this area? No. I honestly don't think that that's going to threaten you. I think these are extremely unattractive places to live. Maybe I'll be proven totally wrong, but I think folks will always prefer and try to get into first either a condo, townhouse, well, condo last. First would be a single family residential, second would be a townhome, third would be a condo, fourth would be an apartment. But we have so many folks here that need places to live that these apartments are really going to fill a need, and these are going to be folks who couldn't afford to rent a house or a townhouse in any event. So I don't see this adding a level of competition for the single family residential townhome marketplaces. So I don't think anybody in these markets really need to start thinking about reducing their rents. I just don't see that as a realistic expectation. So from the standpoint of someone, if you're a buyer, will any of this help you? Not really. Unless you want to move into an apartment, unless you want to decide you don't want to be a buyer and you want to be a renter again in terms of renting an apartment, no, this isn't really going to help you. You're not going to see this reducing the prices of single-family residential homes. In all honesty, if I was a buyer in this marketplace now, and this is going to sound a little self-serving, I would actually start looking outside of the Silicon Valley bubble. And of course, that's my town. Morgan Hill is south of San Jose, and we're sort of a bedroom community for Silicon Valley. But also San Martin, Northern Gilroy. There are parts of Gilroy I personally would probably try to avoid. The best high school in Gilroy is Christopher High School. So I'd probably look for a home in that area, and it would save you a ton of money. It adds about 20 to 30 minutes to your commute, depending on where you work. If you work at some place near where Apple is, for instance, it's probably a 40, 45 minute drive. If you work up near Moffett Field, same kind of distance. So something to calibrate you to if you're someone who's in this area and that kind of data is important to you at all. For those of you who are sellers, I don't think this is really going to affect you, at least not folks in my area. For those of you in areas where you have seen an increase in single-family residential homes, you might see a bit of a bump in folks transitioning from renting from you if they're renting a single-family residential home into buying one. I honestly don't think that we've seen enough of a jump here for that to be the case. These kinds of numbers are good to know for your local area, though. If you don't have a good local real estate professional that you're working with, I suggest you find one and get these kinds of numbers for your local area. and if you're looking, and if you're an investor person, what can you use this data for? Well, you're seeing marketplaces where clearly it's indicated that renting is the thing. Now, despite the fact we're going to see a huge increase in apartment rentals, multifamily rentals, if I were an investor in this area, I would be looking for single-family residential opportunities in a variety of different areas. I still think that there's room for the person who wants to come in, buy a property, improve it, and then rent it. You could do the flipping thing. I'm more of a buy and hold guy. I think that the rental marketplace right now is so robust that it just makes sense to buy and hold that stuff and then rent it. Unfortunately, the math in a lot of these cases no longer works. You'd have to put down an awful lot of money and take a lower cap rate on your investment in order to make it cash flow for you. That may be okay with you. I'm in a mode where I would prefer my cash to be in a real thing. Even if I'm concerned that real estate may potentially go down a little bit or not increase in value that keeps pace with a decline in the value of the dollar, I would still rather own a thing than have the money that that thing represents. At least in the world of real estate, people will always need a roof over their head. So you're at least always going to have some way to generate some sort of cash flow off of that property. You just want to make sure and buy it right. You want to make sure to buy it so that it does cash flow. In fact, we'll probably be doing a show sometime, well, maybe this week, now that we'll be doing five. And I'm still debating on how many shows a week I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to do five. So just Monday through Friday and then leave the weekends open for me to focus more on my on-the-ground real estate work. Or if I'm going to do 7 days. I'm not really sure. We'll see how that goes moving forward. But in any event, I still think that given that if you're an investor, even if you're a first-time investor, if you're out there looking for real estate, don't stop looking for deals. Look for opportunities. Be willing to continue to just make offers. Making an offer costs you nothing. It is so easy to put an offer together right now. It just doesn't make sense. If you get something to say that would work for me if I could pay this amount of money for it, make an offer at that amount of money. It might be ridiculous. There may be no chance in hell that you think that that offer is going to get accepted. You know, and if since we know that 12% of the population believes that we didn't land on the moon, once you've made 100 offers, you can bet that if that's how many people believe we didn't land on the moon, you can bet that there's 12% who for whatever weird reason may take a really lowball offer. Right? So just have faith in the potential lunacy of the selling public. It may work out for you. But persistence pays. And that's another thing I think that anyone who ends up really being successful in these kinds of things realizes, that sometimes it's just about going through the motions, right? It's the guy looking for the pearl in the oyster. You open an oyster, nothing. You open an oyster, nothing. 10 days into it, you've opened thousands of oysters and suddenly you find yourself a pearl. But you went through the motions. You did it every time. You didn't say, oh, I'm going to wait for an oyster that's got a pearl in it. Well, you don't know it unless you open it, right? When you don't know what kind of a deal you can get on real estate till you write up an offer. And today you don't even need to pick up a pen and write. You find yourself an agent who's fully in the modern world and you'll be able to make that offer, sign it digitally online. The time between you saying, yeah, let's go ahead and make an offer, and you making that offer could literally be 15 minutes, and you'd never have to change out of your pajamas. You could just do it online, call up or email your real estate person, have them generate the stuff, go on the DocuSign, sign it, you're all set to go. All right, folks, that is it. This is the first show in what's going to be an absolutely new way that we end up delivering real estate realities. I'm kind of excited. I know that might sound a little bit hokey. I've never liked the idea of sounding like one of the people who I have frequently mocked who does these kinds of shows. But there you go. And I, you know what? And here's something else I know. If I do get tempted to the dark side in any way, there's no doubt in my mind that I could count on you folks to pull me back. I'd like to think I've already got a really good compass when it comes to that type of stuff. I've been doing this in awful long time. I've been talking about things that annoy me for an awful long time. And I got to tell you, I feel like that attitude, that shave off all the bull attitude, coming to something like this, where it's not about playing a really high power motivational song to get you pumped to do whatever it is you're going to do. It's really all about, I don't know what to say about it. I mean, it's almost, there's an existential side to it. where you have to grapple with things inside your head that are keeping you from achieving things. And I say this as someone who's been in it. I mean, despite the fact I've done this for so long, some of the things I learned about myself over the last year and a half, 2 years, it's kind of been wow. It's been an experience where I've kind of looked in the mirror and said, you know, what were you thinking? What you've wasted so much time not doing these things. What kind of bull were you feeding yourself to hold yourself back? And I'm hoping that perspective will help you out as much as it did me when I finally realized that you can sort of see things for what they are. Now, as always, there's a variety of ways to get in contact with me. You can head on over to therebelbroker.com. The face of that site's going to be changing. I'm going to be switching it around. I've already found a way that I can deliver the show live, and then you would call me via Skype to participate. So there probably will be some live shows, but the vast majority of these shows are going to be pre-recorded, and primarily simply because now it will, by doing it that way, by not being married to the live format, I can deliver a show a day. I can find 30 minutes a day to an hour to do this, whether it's in the morning or the afternoon or the evening or whenever. I can find that time. So something along, it'll get posted every day, at least every business day, Monday through Friday. And I know I keep saying this, I'm really looking forward to you joining me on this ride. I think it could be a good time. We're going to learn a lot of cool stuff. And hopefully these are tools you're going to be able to use to get rich. If you'd like to get in contact with me, you can try 408-852-0525. The best way to contact me is to head on over to the website at rebelbroker.com. I'll talk to you all next time.